Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
So, Simon Child.
Lovely man, lovely chap. It was a really brilliant, you know, so many fingers in so many pies. Mm. He must be, what's that phrase we use, he's spinning plates like a left iron centre.
But seems a very structured, considered individual. Mm. So doing everything intentionally with consistency.
Definitely. I love the bit about meditation.
Mm.
That creating a space for you to just empty your mind a bit. I think it's very valuable, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And also that whole kind of the purpose behind Parler. Mm. In terms of kind of why and what it means. And some of the numbers he was talking about toothpaste tubes are just incredible.
Yeah.
And people will have to listen to find out how he got on with the tattoo.
Yeah. And it must be the ultimate buzz, mustn't it, when you can actually see something that you've created
come to life.
It must be amazing. Yeah. Yeah, and whatever that word was again, a tattoo. Yeah, now you'll have to all try and find out what it means.
Well, if you listen to this episode and you like it and you enjoy it, please feel free to share it with a friend or colleague because that gets out to more people, which would be amazing. And if you could subscribe, we'd be really, really grateful. I hope you enjoyed this episode. So here we are again. How are you doing, Chris? You good?
I'm very good, very good. Lovely to be here again. Absolutely. It's always very enjoyable.
Absolutely.
Lovely to speak to our guests, I tell you.
Yeah, well, today we are so pleased. We have the co-principal of Rothley Lodge Dental Practice, which he runs with his wife, Megan. He's the founder of Parler, the innovative toothpaste
tab, which we have
a good chat about. President of the BACD. I've got to take a breath before I get to the last bit, which is, and also dentistry person of the year.
Dentistry person of the year.
How are you?
I'm very well, lads. Nice to speak to you.
Brilliant.
Dentistry person of the year. Yeah. Wow, that's something to keep that magazine on the wall, isn't it?
That's impressive. Do they give you a T-shirt?
A nice surprise to receive. Yeah, it's certainly gone straight up on the wall in the practice immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. Right,
so it should. Honestly, I'm not entirely sure where we start, looking at all the things that we've got to get through. You're well known through dentistry.
And he's so young as well.
Oh, don't say that. That would just make me feel even better about himself.
Look at that. Man, so much in such a short time.
But you've got so much going on. Let's get back to the beginning before we get onto the dental bit. What were your early years like? What did life look like for the young Simon?
I'm the son of two dentists. So dentistry has been in the blood from an early age. I always like to say that I was brought up with a mirror and a probe in the cutlery drawer. So I guess I had that in the background. Very close family. I'm the oldest of three. So very tight-knit family with a much bigger extended family around it as well. Brought up in Surrey, which is a lovely place to live, just outside of London. I guess the big seminal moment of my childhood was my sister getting cancer when she was seven. So she got osteosarcoma in her leg, so she got bone cancer, which came as obviously a huge shock for the whole family, especially my parents, it meant that she was in hospital for a solid 6 months while they actually treated the cancer. That was residential with my mum staying there for 6 months as well, and then she had around 23 operations throughout her childhood as she grew. So that was we started on a very somber note here, I'm afraid, but it is.
How old were you at the time, Simon?
If I was nine, so I was
very close, yeah.
Obviously, big shock, and it's definitely, I think, shaped who I am as a human, both for positive and for negative. As I think you find with a lot of people who strive and are very ambitious and are sort of constantly going after the next thing. And they're always, if you listen to any other podcast with any other successful individual, you always hear the same pattern of childhood stress or sort of stressful life event leading to this sort of perpetual desire for growth and ambition. So yeah, that's I guess, a big part of my childhood.
But Simon, you said for positive and negative. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think I don't think I would be I don't think I would drive as hard as I do to achieve everything that I do achieve if it wasn't for that part of my childhood. It also makes me, I guess, a bit of a people pleaser and a perfectionist, which is a good trait as a dentist, because it means that I always want to make sure that I'm doing things to the absolute top quality, the best that I can do it. But at the same time, I'm super hard on myself, as tends to be the situation with perfectionism. It's unachievable. And so it creates a lot of tension that's not always positive.
And it's your own measurement as well, isn't it? It's by your own standards.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so I don't, and also in that sort of people pleaser mentality, I also probably don't take criticism as well as I could do, which is something that I've been sort of working on, having that resilience to negative critique, which whenever, like tall poppy syndrome, I'm 6'4", so I tend to be quite a tall poppy at the best of times. So whenever I naturally receive that negative criticism, which you always will do, because there'll always be a certain subsection of the population who don't like you, I haven't dealt with that as well as I could have done in the past. And it's definitely something that I've worked really hard on building over the last, I don't know, 5-7 years since my profile in the industry has grown so much.
Did you play sport at school? Sorry, do you mind? I was wondering if you played sport at school.
Yeah, I played. I mean, we were a big rugby school, so rugby was the main sport. And then tennis, cricket, football, nothing to a particularly high level, but always been passionate about it. And always enjoyed it. Miss it now, to be honest.
I said, I just wondered if you were big as a child, so whack you in the rugby team, I'd have thought. Or did you sort of like grow later on?
I was tall and skinny, so that I used to get thrown up in the line out, but I didn't have that much weight behind me going into the
Okay.
Just on the criticism bit, Simon, you were saying about getting better, and I'm sure we all can get better at dealing with kind of criticism and feedback. Since your profile's risen, you're obviously well known through social media. Social media is well known for not being the nicest place in terms of criticism and feedback. Do you deal with that sort of criticism different than perhaps if a clinical peer critiqued some of your work? Are you able to differentiate the people who you really respect and appreciate against the people who don't have an influence over you at all, i.e., you know, trolls online?
I said the arseholes online.
Yeah.
Not really, I don't think, because I'm very bad at disassociating my clinical work from me. And if someone is negative about that in what I view to be unjust way, then I probably haven't responded to that in the best way traditionally. And as I say, I'm much better at it now, thankfully. And it's something that I put a lot of work and time into, both with regards to meditation and therapy and just sort of internal dialogue. It is the nature of the beast. I mean, social media, I always say, is a double-edged sword. It's got an incredible, it's been a huge instrument in my career to help build my profile within the industry, and also to help build my business. And I mean, I've never done any paid marketing at my dental practice. It's all been done through what I would call an amplified word of mouth, through using through working with influencers and through building my profile on social media. And still today I get all my new patients that arrive find me through Instagram, even though I'm much less active on it than I was previously. Then you've got to take the negativity at the same time.
I say it must be quite hard. I do quite like, is it James Blunt who sort of embraced in responding to people who are negative to him? I think it's a great way of responding to people, because it's sort of like shuts them down, really, doesn't it? I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So on business, obviously your parents, you know, are in business, own your dental practice. As a young person, did you always have a flair for business? Was it something that you were always drawn to, or did you sort of start out as an out and out clinician?
No, I've always had an entrepreneurial flair about me, and I mean, when I was younger, my brother and I set up a protein fruit smoothie company called Blends with Benefits.
That's good. I like that. That's good.
That was just one of the wacky ideas that we had, and that was before all the sort of protein market blew up in the way that it has done. So there's been a variety of different entrepreneurial ideas that I've got to various different levels of development with. So from that point of view, that's always been there. And then also, I think from a marketing point of view, certainly I remember when I was a dental student, Megan, my wife, who is obviously my business partner at the practice as well, we'd be sitting, I'd meant to be revising on, I don't know, anatomy or something like that. And what I'd actually be doing would be sort of searching all the top practices in London and seeing how they had their website and seeing what they did their marketing on. That's actually how I found out about the Best Young Dentist Award, was through those sort of early searches when I was a student. So I've always been interested in that business side of dentistry and growing a brand. So I think that's the nice thing about dentistry, is that you can implement that alongside being a clinician and a wet finger dentist.
Simon, can I ask a question? Did you always know you were going to be a dentist? So did these other things, knowing you were going to be a dentist, or did you not want to be a dentist, did these other things, and then decide to be a dentist?
No, so I didn't. Although my parents were both dentists, like any 16-year-old, you're very susceptible to the direction of your peers. And for some reason, this one kid at school said to me, "Oh, you don't want to do what your parents did. That's really lame. Don't do it." And I took that to heart, decided to go into pharmacology, which is my first degree at Bristol. Turned up at day one at Bristol. And then my next door neighbor in my halls of residence was a dentist, Tom Crawford Clark, who you guys might know.
You're still good friends with him. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was the best man at my wedding. I was the best man at his. We're both godparents to each other's kids. So Tom was in the room next door, and I saw this amazing community that he had with the dental school and all the sort of interesting stuff that he was doing on the course, but sort of practical and science-based. And it was that, like, sort of really clear sort of representation of what dentistry is all about from seeing Tom go through it in that first term at Bristol. Meant that I then had a decision to make: either drop out and reapply to dentistry, or complete my degree and then go on to fast track dentistry, where you miss out the first year. And I elected to do the latter of those two, and the rest is history, really. And as soon as I got onto the dental course, I think because I'd already done my partying and my sort of real undergraduate student thing at Bristol, when I got to King's to do my dentistry, it was like a job for me, because all my mates are working in the city. I was there to work, and I think that naturally led to me sort of driving and excelling at a much faster rate. And I'd also found my passion, right? I'd not really had any real direction until that stage, where I thought, right, this is me, this is what I'm good at. I was a relatively average student at school. I was a relatively average sportsman at school. I never really had something that I was really passionate about. And so when I found dentistry, that was actually the first time that had happened.
But I think it really shines through when you see somebody in whatever walk of life where they're passionate about it. You can't help but get carried away with it. And like you say, you've clearly found the thing that's important to you. We met at an event. It was at Excel. It feels like it was 6 months ago. It was probably about 18 months ago. And I remember there was me, you and Payman talking. And I remember you said that you spent most of your 20s saying yes to things, so that you now say no to more things in your 30s. Talk us through the logic for that, because obviously there's a real kind of opportunity v focus decision, and it kind of leads into the things you're doing now. But what were you just literally just saying yes to whatever came up, and was the logic there to try and find out more things that might interest you in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not going to lay claim to that quote, because I'm pretty sure I've stolen it from somewhere else, but.
we all do.
Yeah.
So, recycle away is always much better than stolen. Yeah.
Exactly. But no, I mean, certainly I was trained by a gentleman, Professor Avi Banerjee at King's, and he really got me started on this journey of just go for everything and then see what lands, and then if that keeps on working for you, then keep on pushing in that direction. So at university, that meant going for every competition, every award, every essay prize, just trying to get that CV going and to differentiate myself from my peers. And then once I qualified, I sort of got involved with the BACD at that stage, and that then led to me like going to lots of BACD events. And I think what people don't realize is at this stage, I'm not me now. I'm not super confident. I'm just your average individual going to these events, feeling a bit awkward because I don't know anyone. And then that sort of grew and I started building a network, and that led to me getting my first private job straight out of VT. That led to me being given opportunities to lecture. Again, I was not a good public speaker when I was a child. And yet now I'm very, very confident being a public speaker. Everywhere I've got to in my career came from me saying yes to lots and lots of things. And there's just such a long tail with this stuff, especially in an industry like dentistry where it's so small and your reputation is super important with regards to if people can trust you and they know the sort of what you stand for and the qualities and the values that you have. And so I just tried to get out there in as many situations as I could do, meet as many people as I could do, show them what I was all about as much as I could do. And that led to a lot of stress. I mean, I'm not saying it's not easy. Like when you put yourself out to lecture 2 or 3 years out of uni because you've been given this opportunity and you take it, that's stressful. Firstly, because public speaking is scary if you're not used to doing it a lot. But secondly, actually, because dentistry at that stage especially was not a very friendly place for a young dentist coming through. And I got so much trolling for even having the gumption to give a lecture at that stage. What can I learn from you? You're so young. And I always came at it with humility and said, look, I'm lecturing on something that I know a lot about. At that point was CEREC and sort of basic level CEREC dentistry and dental photography, two topics that I knew a lot about already, and more than other individuals who were just coming into it. I wasn't there saying I'm the master of occlusion and full mouth rehabilitations. But the nuance of that was lost on some. And so it led to a lot of negativity. So, I really stand by the say yes to as many things in your 20s as you can, because if you do that, you get that really nice broad base and then you can start tapering into things that you really enjoy. If you go too narrow too early, then you miss out on the opportunity to actually find what you really, really care about. And then in my 30s, I now have two kids. I'm blessed to have a vast array of opportunities. And if I continue to say yes to everything, then I actually get burnt out. And so now I'm very, very much more tapered in on saying yes to the right opportunities, like having wonderful conversations with you fine gentlemen, and not saying yes to everything, because otherwise it does get a bit much.
I think that's really valuable, because lots of people will see you for where you are in the profession today and think, well, I'll be like that. And then they start mimicking you and wanting that kind of profile and that life without seeing the years that have gone before in terms of building that position. It's interesting what you say about kind of going back to that tall poppy syndrome phrase, that when you first started lecturing, dentistry wasn't a particularly friendly place back then. But I think now, I think it is. I think we see lots of younger dentists, you know, raising their profile and you know, working with some of the brands when they're not long since out of dental school. Would you say there has been a significant shift in the time that you've been in dentistry?
Yeah, I think so, because it's not so new anymore. I think when we started doing it, like me, I don't know, George, Rona, George Cheatham, on social media, it was really new, right? Like, I was there on Facebook, showing my cases on Facebook. Then that transitioned into Instagram. We were very early on Instagram back in 2015, 16. And actually, to be honest, that shift away from Facebook is the really, what was, I don't know if it still is because I'm not on it anymore, but was the really nasty place where there was a lot of negativity and a lot of trolling. I've not found the same level on Instagram ever, really. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because people follow you and... I don't know, but
perhaps was older people on Facebook. That's interesting, yeah. One. Yeah, maybe it's an age thing. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
because they do say, isn't it, Facebook is for older people.
You're on it.
Well, I don't even use it, but even people younger than myself. Instagram.
It might be. Just shifting direction a bit. So you obviously still you work with Megan, your wife, in the practice. Are your parents still working in the practice with you, or have they both retired now?
My mum's retired. My dad's still practicing.
Okay. So how does that work in terms of that dynamic? Because you're obviously, and I know you're not in the clinic every day, but you're working with, you know, your father, would have been your mother and father, and your wife. How do you create that clear separation so that you just don't have this continuum of dentistry flowing through everything in your life?
I mean, I've always really enjoyed it, to be honest, and I feel very blessed to be able to spend those additional hours with the people that I love. Certainly now, sort of as my dad is probably on his way towards retirement, who knows when he'll actually retire, I'm really, really aware and grateful for having extra time to work alongside him, because it's great fun. I don't know. I mean, I think we all love what we do, and so there's never any negativity around talking about it too much. I think we all have our own passions outside of that. Megan and I have a lot going on outside of dentistry, a lot of shared passions outside of dentistry. And so it's not really something that we have to think about. It's not like we get home, we talk about dentistry all evening, and then we've got nothing else to say to each other. It's actually, I think I just view it as a value add rather than a negative in any way. And naturally, having people who understand the nuances of and the stresses that come alongside dentistry, I find really, really helpful. It's what I've always grown up with, I guess. So it's just normality for me.
Mm. And describe the practice that you've got. It's obviously Rotherley Lodge, but what sort of shape is that practice? It's quite a large practice, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're... So my parents bought it 6 months before I was born. At that stage, it was a sort of a 1-2 surgery practice. They grew it to a 5 surgery practice over the last sort of 35 years up until 2017. Megan and I bought it from them then, and then grew it a further 2 surgeries on top, and brought in sort of a real focus on technology, a real focus on multidisciplinary care, basically trying to bring in specialities so that we could cover all the bases for our fairly large patient base. So yeah, now it's a 7 surgery practice. We've got about 30 staff. We've got perio, we've got endo. We do a lot of Invisalign. We obviously do a lot of CEREC and a lot of implants, very technologically focused, using microscopes, CBCT, basically any way that we can use the latest technology to improve outcomes, efficiencies, and the patient journey, in essence, is the way that I look at it.
Well, there's no doubt, isn't there, that digital dentistry is producing much better outcomes and predictability. Have you explored AI yet?
I mean, I use it with regards to my good friend Kyle Stanley is the founder or the clinical director of Pearl AI, which is a radiology AI diagnostic support, which is really great. I use AI with regards to my CEREC machine. The AI has deep learning to learn where to trace the margins more accurately. And I've dabbled on ChatGPT just to have a little play with it and see what it's all about. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we're all using AI, whether we know it or not. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see how it helps with dentistry. I think with something like Pearl, where you're breaking down that trust barrier to a certain extent with the patient. And actually, it's not about my opinion. It's about, look, the computer has outputted this information. Mm. This is my diagnostic human touch on top that interprets and uses common sense and reason and all those sorts of things. And I personally view that the synergy between technology and humans is where the magic happens. That's what I always say with CEREC dentistry is, yes, my milling unit will output a crown, let's say, but actually me just finishing it, polishing it, adding a little bit of staining and characterization, that's where the magic happens. And it's the blend of those two that I think really works well. And they show that with the radiology. I think when you've got a trained radiologist or radiographer and AI together, that's when they get the most predictability of diagnosis.
I think Pearl, one of Pearl's phrases is second opinion, isn't it? And it's kind of saying, we don't want to replace a clinician. We want to sort of support an agent. I think you're right. I think that's where the best of AI will come. I think, I'm sure it's going to affect jobs in some areas, but I think in your world,
definitely,
I think it'll be there to support you. Mm. When I was doing the research for our talk today, I came across a word that I'd never heard before, which is a tatsu. I don't know if you guys know what a tatsu is, but a tatsu is the proper collective noun for a group of dragons.
Oh, there you go.
It is. A It's a tatsu. So if you've got a group of dragons, it's a tatsu, which is a lovely segue into Simon has sat in front of a tatsu.
Well, there you go.
So you obviously...
You don't often get to use that word, though, will you? It's
when I found the word, I can't tell you how pleased I was. When I saw that word, I thought, I've got to use that. But so you got through, you actually got to sit in front of the dragons on Dragon's Den presenting Parlour, which must have been incredible.
Mm.
It was quite the experience. 2.5 hours of grilling under the lights with no breaks on live TV, recorded TV is pretty intense.
And that's the thing that I was interested in, because obviously when we get to see it on television, you know, it's a television program that kind of circles through some great ideas, but you don't get to see much of
your
what's said. Because like you say, there for 2.5 hours and we see, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes or whatever it would have been. What was that 2.5 hour process like? Is it just grilling for 2.5 hours? And did you also feel that the edit that was shown was a fair representation of how that process went?
So it's just basically you walk in through the fake lift. So you get into the lift and then you walk out the other side. And then as those doors open, you see these five dragons sitting in front of you, which is just bizarre. I mean, it was still COVID times at that stage. So there was no chatting to them before. There was no chatting to them afterwards. You literally walked into the lift and then you were there on that set. And I mean, I've been watching Dragon's Den since I was a kid. So it was just, spine tingling to see it being revealed in that way. You then stand on the X on the floor that you've been told to walk onto and then basically just give your pitch. I think our pitch was about, I don't know, a minute and a half, something like that, 90 seconds. Once your pitch is done, then they try the product and then the grilling starts. And you've got no idea which angle it's going to come from. Obviously, you've got five of them there in front of you. It's intense. I mean, we had some dragons that were very much on our side, like Deborah, Tej, even Peter and Sarah were on our side. Tooker really was not a fan at all. He had his own dental company, I think, so there was potentially a conflict of interest there. I was very happy with how we performed. I knew my numbers, which was the main thing that I wanted to cock up on. So I knew my numbers. I still feel that we have an incredible brand and a great proposition. And so I'm very confident. And this is the same with all public speaking. Whenever I'm confident about the topic, I'm not scared. It's when I'm having to talk about something that I'm not confident on, which is why I was so sure to make sure I had my numbers dialed in, because I'm not a particularly mathematically minded individual. So that was where I felt I could be unstuck. But yeah, I mean, we had two offers from the Dragons, one from Deborah, one from Tej. They wanted 30% of the business, which we were never going to give them. I mean, the reality of the situation was we were asked to go on the show in July, August 2020 was when the researcher reached out to us. And then we filmed the show September 2020, and then it went on TV April 21. So we'd only been trading for six months when we went on the show. So we knew it probably wasn't the right time to be raising funds, but we also weren't going to miss out on an opportunity of a lifetime. So we went for it. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Given how few people watch real TV nowadays, it's amazing the penetration that Dragon's Den still has, because I still have people coming up to me now saying that they've seen the show, and whether that be a buyer from a supermarket or a dentist or just Joe blogged off the street, it's really interesting to see.
In a bizarre way, it probably also, one, it's great PR, isn't it? But it also provides a bit of authority in a way with the fact of two dragons were happy to invest. It sort of makes to the corporate buyers, they go, oh, okay. It was worth looking at. It's probably a useful bit of, just that positive, almost like that background, isn't it?
Yeah.
That background noise that overall gives you a real positive disposition towards it. Mm. That's brilliant.
But also, I think it was a smart move bringing Stephen Barlett in, because I think that's opened up a younger audience. Mm. I think it's always been popular with younger people, but I think that was quite smart. So in terms of the inspiration for Parlour, because in terms of being good for the planet and planet positive and recyclable bottles and not using plastic or palm oil and all the things that are so important, you and your family, I see you spend a lot of time in the water. you love the seaside and the ocean. Was that the kind of thing, you know, what actually sparked Parler? Because quite often there's that kind of little thing that got you thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, really. I always say I'm never happier than when I'm in the ocean, by the ocean or on the ocean. I had my daughter in 2018, and it was around that time that I was really thinking about my impact on the planet. I was watching Plastic Ocean, the Netflix documentary. I was watching Planet Earth. I was just becoming more and more aware of the impact we were having on the planet, and specifically the impact that single-use plastic was having. So Megan and I had already made big changes within our own home to switch out single-use plastic items for reusable or plastic-free solutions where we could do. At that stage, I was on the TV advert for Oral-B, and I think I just got to a point where I was thinking to myself, right, I'm trying to live my life in this very sustainable way, trying to limit my impact on the planet and on the ocean. But actually, I'm in essence a part of the problem where I'm clogging these single-use plastic toothpaste tubes that are used for a month and then they last forever. I mean, they last for 500 years. So every tube of toothpaste that anyone's ever used still exists somewhere on the planet.
That's insane.
And so we wanted to create a solution that that not only solves that problem, which is 20 billion toothpaste tubes a year, by the way. So not only solved that problem, but also gave dentists an option that they could actually comfortably and predictably recommend to their patients with no negative impact on their oral health, and actually using the best ingredients. So it actually had a more positive impact on their oral health, because all of us as dentists know things like sodium lauryl sulfate, which is the harsh palm oil based foamy agent found in most toothpastes, actually causes a lot of mouth irritation, a lot of mouth soreness, and also causes deforestation. So it's making sensible ingredient based decisions like that, that are good for the planet and good for our patients. That's what we wanted to be all about as Parler. So yeah, it's basically, for those people that don't know, it's a glass jar with an aluminium lid. And we have these little toothpaste tablets, which are dehydrated toothpaste, with all, as I say, all the ingredients you'd expect as a dentist, fluoride and everything else that we want to prevent dental issues, but none of the unpleasant, unnecessary stuff like artificial flavorings and colorings, SLS, those sorts of things. So that's where it came from, really.
And I'm traveling later on this week, so I'm hoping to pick up one of the travel packs at Heathrow Airport, if they've got them. Because you've got travel packs now as well, haven't you?
We do, yeah. Boots have been very kind to pick us up across, I think, well, we thought we were only going into 50 stores, but it turns out that it seems like we're everywhere now. So we're in, like, I go to Waterloo a lot, so we were in Boots Waterloo, we're at Terminal 5. So yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's so exciting. I put it on LinkedIn that whenever you see a product, I genuinely created that product. Everything about it, like, obviously I've worked with all my creatives and everything, but in my mind I created it, and then to see it physically on the shelves is just, it's just such a cool feeling.
Yeah,
must be the ultimate buzz, mustn't it?
Oh,
must be like when you, if you write a song and you hear your song sung or whatever, it must be like, well, I did that.
It's very cool. And I mean, over the years, we started different businesses, and in some ways the fact it's hard is a good thing, because if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. What's the toughest thing you've been through from a business perspective? I guess that situation you described with your sister when you were young was a very personal thing. But what about from a business point of view? What's the toughest thing that you've been through?
I mean, in all my businesses, I would say COVID. Like shutting my practice was, brutal. And everything that followed during that lockdown time, it was stressful. We had no idea what was going to happen, right? And we only found out a week before we were meant to go back to work on BBC that we were going back in. So there was so much uncertainty and stress at that time. It was, that's got to be the most challenging. With Parler, it's, I mean, anyone who's started a startup will know that it's constantly huge spikes and crashing lows. We're always struggling to manage stock levels and running out or too much, or something's gone bad and we've got to change it, or rejections and acceptances, and it's an ongoing roller coaster of emotions. But
I was going to ask you, what's it like dealing with the suits in the big corporates that you've gone to, you know, the Boots? Did I see you on outside Sainsbury's or something? You know, it'd be interesting. Was that almost like you had to do a bit of a recalibration because they look at something in a very different way than you look at it, because they're probably looking at margins as much as efficacy?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, yeah, so we're in Sainsbury's, Waitrose, Boots, Ocado now. They're sort of the big four from a retail side of things. And yeah, I mean, that's been, I mean, that's, to be honest, I've loved it. I've loved that experience.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about the fact that retailers are really hard-nosed and very difficult to work with. In general, to be honest, I've had wonderful experiences with our buyers. They've been really engaged in what we're all about. Yes, we have to maintain a rate of sale, and they sort of highlight what that rate of sale is per store per week, and we have to achieve that, and we've been doing a fantastic job in doing that. But naturally, we're not going to do the same volumes as your, I mean, I won't say any names, otherwise I'll get in trouble, but your big brand, toothpaste.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to do those volumes because we don't have the brand penetration yet that they do. But we're fulfilling, I think, something different for the retailers, in that they have their own ESG ambitions. They have their own sort of plastic-free and ethical and ecological ambitions as businesses. And that's how we help them, I guess, is that we're there, we're using the right ingredients, we're sourcing it from the right locations, we're putting it in the right packaging that's either always reusable, compostable, or infinitely recyclable. And so we're actually delivering real sustainable solutions. And the problem is, the big brands are coming out now and saying, oh, we've got recyclable toothpaste tubes. And it's like, well, firstly, only 12% of those are getting recycled, according to this year's statistics. So that means that basically only 1 in 10 is getting recycled. If it does get recycled, it can only be recycled a couple of times before it hits landfill anyway, because the plastic denatures after a few times of recycling. So it's going to hit landfill and get into the ocean anyway. So you're just delaying the problem to the next generation. Yeah. And that's what we're fighting against, is that the big brands now realize that they have to make eco claims, but the reality is that it's not as good as they say it is.
What was that greenwashing, wasn't it? I saw some article yesterday or something about that they're going to start putting massive fines on companies that are greenwashing stuff. I think it was a car. I just saw a picture. I won't mention which car in case it was just a but it was interesting. They were saying, they're going to start looking at the green credentials because a lot of people do greenwash. My wife, Jill, is very into sustainable clothing. And she says, you know, when you look and research, there's so many places that make grand claims, but in reality they're not, they are just greenwashing. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because I was thinking, the fact of those supermarkets, those retailers, the difference is they see you as a partner, don't they, to help you, by the sounds of things, get to their own sustainability. It's great, actually.
Yeah. Do you get any preferential treatment as being an ethical challenger brand? Do they give you any additional help beyond who they were buying from other people?
They do, yeah. I mean, we've been part of Sainsbury's Future Brands Incubator Program, for example. So that's a group of challenger brands that they've handpicked, that they give additional support to, because they know that we're doing things for the right reasons, but obviously we don't have the budgets that these huge multinationals have. And so they try and support us in that way. So as I say, I've been really impressed with the supermarkets and the pharmacies and these big brands. It's been amazing to see the inner workings of the businesses as well. We've been to a few of their conferences and that sort of thing, and I've loved it. I mean, it's hilarious. I'll literally be in my clinic, especially when we were just pitching them. I'd be in my clinic in my scrubs. I'd quickly change out, get my sort of edgy startup denim shirt on, run into another room at the surgery, and then pitch to Sainsbury's to like see if we can land on their shelves. And that's what my life's been like for the last, I mean, we're doing it again this week. I won't tell you the brand that we're going into, but I'm finishing the clinic at 3. I'm rushing up into town to pitch to another retailer.
That's brilliant though, isn't it? I mean, it's exciting though, isn't it, Simon? It must be sort of like really exciting, I'd have thought.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's nice to have that variation, right? I mean, I do 3 days a week clinical, 2 days a week on my sort of extracurricular business activities. And it's nice to be able to have that variation in life.
Which is a very nice lead into, in Wales last year, you were then moved up to the position of president of the BACD, as if there wasn't enough on your plate. I know you said very early on that, you know, you attended BACD meetings, but it's been a constant thread through your career, hasn't it? It's been really a really important part of your dental life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been there. I mean, the story of how I got involved with the BACD was that I was on dentaltown.com when I was a student, which was a very geeky sort of forum before people used to share cases on Facebook and Insta. It was all on these sorts of forums, and someone would post a case and then everyone would discuss it.
Was that Howard Ferran? Was that Howard Ferran?
Yes. Did he do that? Yeah, that's his website.
So
there's it's mainly US guys, but there's a couple of UK guys on there, Tiff Qureshi and Jason Smithson primarily. And so I reached out to Tiff, who at that point was showing these Align Bleach Bond cases that no one I knew had even heard that GDPs could do aligning and whitening and minimally invasive cosmetic dentistry. This is back in 2011. And I said to Tiff, do you want to come down to King's and give us a lecture? And everyone's really excited about this like new modern way of doing cosmetic dentistry. Because at that point, all I thought cosmetic dentistry was either whitening or hacking back teeth for porcelain veneers. Those were the only two options that you had. And so it was really interesting to see this sort of much more modern approach, which obviously is ubiquitous in the market now. So we got Tiff down. He gave this amazing lecture. We got about 200 people there at on the evening. And he basically said, do you want to get involved with the BACD? So I came in as a student ambassador, then got onto the Young Membership Committee, onto membership, then onto the board, about six years ago, and then just gradually made my way up, obviously now to the top job. But no, it's been, as you say, I think that you've described it perfectly, that it's been a constant thread of network, mentors, education, throughout even careers and getting my first two private jobs came through connections at the BACD. So it's been there the whole way through, and it's really easy to take that sort of thing for granted, but it's why I'm so passionate about it now as the president. And people ask me, why do you want to be president? Why is the BACD important to you? And it's because I want to make sure that it carries on doing what it's done for me, because without it, I 100% would not have been as successful and as enjoy my career as much as I do today. And it's given me so much. So it is, in my view, sort of a bit of a charitable endeavor. Obviously, it's not a paid gig. So it's in that way, I feel like it's my responsibility to make sure it's there for the next generation. Because, I mean, look at what they've got to deal with now. These young, I mean, I lectured at King's Barts the other day to the students, and it's super confusing for them, right? Like, they're seeing this highlight reel of amazing cases on social media every day. They're coming out undertrained and with very little hands-on experience into a highly litigious environment where they're expected to learn on the job, but you could also get sued. So that's a super stressful scenario. And it's no wonder that there's still a mental health epidemic in our profession and people are still killing themselves. So I think for me, the BACD is the pillar and the beacon for ethical cosmetic dentistry. And it's really important to me that it continues to offer that support structure to the next generation of dentists as well, and to experienced dentists as well. I mean, we're not an academy purely for young dentists. The educational profile that we provide is from the top of the world. So it's got something for everyone. But I just think it's really important that it continues to be what it is.
And I think it's a really friendly environment. You know, I got to come down just for a few hours to Wales. And when you walk around and you chat to people, it's like kind of extended family. Everybody wants to be there. And there was a great mixture of you know, young people. There were some people nearly your age.
Really?
In fact, yeah, there were.
Were they the elder statesmen of the... well, you know, that age brings experience a lot of the time.
So. But also, it's still obviously calm, working, because I think Frank Spear was the keynote speaker, wasn't he? And, you know, hundreds of people, you know, want to listen to him. So it obviously has something. And I think Susie does an amazing job. You know, she's just been around forever, and she just manages to pull the right people in at the right time to do the right things.
Susie is BACD.
Yeah.
She is. We couldn't do it without her. No, and I mean, I think it's just, I look forward to it with passion every year. It's the perfect blend of education and social. I mean, the social is wild and fantastic. And as you say, it is an extended family, but it's also not a clique. I mean,
no,
it's great that we've got every year we have the student ambassadors coming in, and they get the opportunity to interact and to mingle. And it's very much an open group. And it's been wonderful to see new people come in and, but yet the people that have come before me still be there and still are passing on that that sort of multi-generational wisdom is really nice to see.
It's interesting, isn't it, really? Because I suppose I always think that we were, when we exhibited at the BACD many, many, many years ago.
Scotland, wasn't it?
Yeah, it probably has become more welcoming. Yeah. Would you say?
Yeah, yeah.
Not as in to us, but I was thinking there seems to be way more dentists who'll go to it than there were before. It was almost like this special, as you say, almost like a clique or potentially at one time, but it's so all-encompassing. Yeah. I think it's brilliant.
I think it started, whenever you're starting something, it's got to start with a nucleus, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got to start quite tight, but then if you allow it to, then it starts to attract more and more. And then
it
grows from there. And I think that's where we're at now. I mean, we've got, I don't know what the exact latest figures are, but it's about 600-700 members, which is, and it's growing every year. And I think that's really great to see, is that people are still being attracted to this community of like-minded individuals who care about what they do. They want to have fun. They want to learn. And it's just a nice place to be.
Yeah. Sharing the knowledge and sharing the experience, I think, is brilliant.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, you said about how hard COVID was. I think people now have an appreciation of getting back to those physical environments where you can spend time with people and socialise. And that's become really important. Given all that you've got going on, we've had conversations in the past about kind of well-being. How do you kind of manage yourself? I know, like, you exercise a lot and diet's important, but is that kind of routine and structure really important for you to get through the day and do all the things that you do as well? You mentioned before about meditation as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's vital. The biggest takeaway I could give to anyone listening to this is how powerful regular exercise is. I mean, I exercise every single day. I wake up at 4:45 in the morning. So that I've got the time to get that in. The reason being that I've got two kids who are both under five. Obviously, I've got multiple businesses. And so I don't want to leave anything to chance with regards to how I look after myself. Because if I'm not functioning in the best possible way for my team members or for my patients or for my family, then I'm not going to be satisfied with myself. So the exercise thing for me is very much about mindset. It's very much about doing the hardest thing of the day before you even get hit by all the inbound emails and Instagram and everything else. And that's why I try and share that on my social media every day, because I want people to see that consistency and to see that it's been so powerful for me, because it's been transformational, to be honest. And then, yeah, with regards to diet, and nutrition, I think you've got to fuel your engine correctly if you want to work at high levels of intensity. And the meditation I find very, very powerful, just for creating a bit of space. I mean, I literally diarize it into my diary. And everyone in my practice knows that at 1:45 till 2, I'm going into a dark room to go and meditate. And they take the mick out of me for it. But I think it's really important to say as well, I'm not perfect. I mean, I'm still, I often will miss my meditation. It's very rare that I miss my workout though, because I have it right at the start of the day. Mm-hmm. And I actually genuinely look forward to it. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, I'm not dragging myself to the gym most days. I actually really enjoy the feeling while I'm doing it, the feeling afterwards. And so for me, it just works quite nicely. So it's been really powerful for me.
Good. I think that word you use, consistency, I think that's the thing that wins over life, isn't it? If you can build things into a routine and do it on a regular basis, the gains that you get ongoing are huge.
100%. I put on my Instagram yesterday, discipline over motivation. I think if you're trying to use motivation all the time, it's fleeting and it's not always there. But if you've got that consistency and you know that this is why I work out every day. I mix up the type of workouts that I do, but the reason I work out every day is that I don't want that rest day, because I'll fall out of my consistency pathway. And so by just knowing that it's going to happen every single day. I don't have to think about it. It's just always there. Now, obviously, if I've had a really late night and too many gin and tonics, then I'm probably going to do something relatively tame and it's not going to be amazing. But the consistency is more important than actually the quality sometimes. Even last couple of weeks ago, I was ill and I still went to my training session and my trainer was like, what are you even doing here? You're a waste of space. but we got a little bit done and I felt better for it. So yeah, that's how I look at it.
Cool. We always finish up in the same way, Simon. We always answer, I guess, the same two questions.
We are intrigued as to what these answers will be.
Yeah. So the first one is, if you could be a fly on the wall in a situation, what room would you like to be in as a fly, listening down and seeing what's going on?
As in today, in today's time, what can I get? Yeah,
well, whenever. You can roll back into.
Could have been the beginning of World War One or whatever. Yeah. You know, whatever you fancy. So. Where there's no limitations.
I'm a massive fan of Stoic philosophy. It's part of my morning routine is reading the Daily Stoic book, which I thoroughly recommend for anyone looking to improve their mindset. But Marcus Aurelius is my sort of top guy. I would have loved to be sort of in his war room because he's such a deep thinker, and there's so much contradiction and juxtaposition with regards to his mindset, but then also he's a general and he's a deep thinker, but he's actually leading all these people into war, and just how all that broke down actually in real time, I'd be fascinated to understand.
Yeah, we use Marcus Aurelius quotes in some of our lectures, don't we?
We do. I think he was opium, wasn't he?
He was opium, yeah.
And if you could meet somebody, if you were given the opportunity to sit down and have a gin and tonic with somebody and
living or dead,
have a chat,
fact or fictional, we don't care.
Yeah, anybody you fancy, who would you like to sit down with?
Well, I won't use Marcus again, but I guess the first person that comes to mind is, it's a tough one actually. I'm going to go for Nelson Mandela, just because that's the quote I've got up on my. That's the quote I've got up on my surgery wall. It's actually in my decon room. But it's the impossible is nothing quote. I think just to go through what he went through and to maintain that level of mental strength is every time I read the story, I'm fascinated by it. And my mum's
humility.
Africa,
yeah.
And to come out with Africa, that.
Oh, really?
Come out with the attitude that he had.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Right. Oh.
What was that?
Simon was just saying his mum's from South Africa.
Oh, okay. Where from?
From Joburg.
Oh, okay. My daughter lives in, one of my daughters lives in Cape Town.
Beautiful place, isn't it?
It is a beautiful place. She lives in an interesting place, which I will tell everybody out another time. She's on a charity project. So it's quite scary, but hey-ho.
I bet. As a dad, especially.
Yep.
I've got all that to come.
Yeah. You wait when they say, look, can we go and live in this? Yeah, of course you can.
It's funny with children. Everybody says it gets easier as they get older. I think it just gets different.
My mum always used to say that the thing she found was, as you got older, she never stopped worrying about us, but there was nothing she could do about it. She says, whereas when you're little, you sort of control their world. But when you're 55 or something, really, there's not much you can do. Go, okay.
Yeah. I think the thing I noticed was the birthday and Christmas presents got smaller but more expensive. That was the thing.
Yeah. Not as many.
Simon, it's been a joy. Absolute
it's
joy.
It's been brilliant.
To you
lovely.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. You're not short of things to keep you busy. So we're grateful for the time this morning.
And yeah, it's fantastic for fitting us in. Thank you so much.
And no doubt there's a blue denim shirt just off screen that you're going to hop into and pitch for your next big idea in the next hour.
Indeed.
Cheers, Simon.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.